Welcome, and thanks for joining us today on the Village Church Sermon Podcast. Week in and week out, we are committed to seeing people transformed into fully devoted followers of Jesus. We invite you to join us financially to ensure this mission continues. You can go to thisisvillagechurch.com/give or simply text the words Village Church to 77977. Thank you for partnering with us, and you can learn more about us at thisisvillagechurch.com. Now, let's get to today's message.
Yes, welcome to Village Church. My name is Jeremy. I am the interim senior pastor of Village Church, and I have the honor of introducing to you a guest speaker today who has actually recently already been a guest speaker here. He's here for the second of two summer engagements at Village Church as a guest speaker. Someone in the back actually, or on the side before the service started, asked me, is it the loud guy today? And I said, yes, actually, it is the loud guy. So why don't you join me in giving a big Village Church welcome to the loud guy, Pastor Mark Clark.
Oh, thank you, brother. All right. Don't get some of you are like, why is this happening again? It just so happened I had two weddings I'd already committed to, so they're flying me up here anyway, so I'm here, all right? So don't worry about it. I'm not going to be in your life this much. Oh, thank you for that. I love y'all. Okay, so those of you who are new, I have no idea what's going on, but I used to be a pastor around this church, and I love it so much and love you guys so much. And just following along with everything Jared's doing and John and the team, all the pastors, I was watching the church planting stuff you guys were talking about a couple weeks ago, the stuff you're doing across Canada. So unbelievable, so unreal, so important, and kind of is driven by the text we're going to look at today. So, John chapter 14 is where we are. If you have a Bible, please open it up to John chapter 14, one of the core texts in the whole New Testament about the big kind of why you would ever plant churches. Why would we ever want people to meet Jesus at all? What's the point of it? And this text pulls back the veil of that reality and starts to tell us why that's important. So, sometimes we don't ask the why question. We just might get up and go, hey, we should go reach people for Jesus. And we don't go, but what's the point? What good is it going to do for anyone? And maybe you're here and you're not a Christian yet. And you're a skeptic and you're exploring Christianity. Awesome. We are glad you're here at any of our sites, online site, whatever it is. We're glad you're watching this, listening, being a part of this, because this is really what life's about, boiling it down to the really big existential questions about why you're here, what's your purpose, where is all of this going, and this text is super important. So here we go, John chapter 14. Last week was Finu doing verses 1, 2, 4, 5, and now we pick it up in verse 5. So it says this, Thomas, okay, so stop right there at Thomas, okay, this is the thing, because here's what I love about Thomas, and this is why it's important. Thomas goes on to become known as who? Doubting Thomas, all right? And that's really important, especially for those of you who are new. Later on, Jesus is going to rise from the dead, and Thomas is going to go, I don't really believe that he rose from the dead until I see his hands and feet, and like I want to see and touch him. And some of you, you are skeptics, and you're here, and you're exploring Christianity, and I just want to affirm you in the context of you might be a Thomas. You might be someone who's like, I don't know about this. And if you know any of my story, that's the context for me. I didn't get raised in the church. My family was super skeptical, and most of the Christians I met gave me answers that didn't really affirm the thinking person's reality that God would exist and Christianity was actually the right way. It was more like people that I knew were like, the world's 10,000 years old. We used to ride on dinosaurs, and dinosaur bones were put there by Satan to deceive the world. And I was like, wow, you're crazy, all right? And then I just move on with my life. And then I started to meet actual thinking smart people who were university professors and scientists and philosophers and psychologists and realized these guys are believing in Jesus. And why are they believing in Jesus? So I started exploring Christianity and realizing that it holds up philosophically, scientifically, psychologically. And I was a doubting Thomas. And maybe that's some of you. And I just want to affirm, okay, maybe you're not someone who just hears something and immediately accepts it. That's okay. One of the 12 disciples was that way. Hung out with Jesus for 3 years and still didn't really believe. Still, when he saw what was happening, he went, I don't know about this, even though Jesus had told him for 3 years. So here's what I would challenge you if you are in that position, though. Always be making sure to doubt your own doubts. Always be making sure to examine the reasons that you might be a doubting person in regard to God, Jesus, the Bible, Christianity, the church, because there's always reasons behind the reasons. Some of you might go, man, think about sexuality. Think about the way you deal with money. Many of you might go, okay, well, the reason I think about sex this way or money this way is because I don't believe in God. But I was reading a philosopher recently who pointed out that might not always be the case. It may be the opposite, in fact. It might be that because of what you've already decided to do with your body and to do with your money, that you've now decided to believe certain things about God, i.e. that he doesn't exist, because you don't want someone having authority over you. And so you've already said, look, I already know what I want to do, and so I don't want to believe in God because then he's going to challenge me. He's going to actually give me things in my life that I don't want to do, and I've already figured out what I want to do with all these things. This is the challenge of the doubting Thomas. You've got to allow God to come into your life and challenge you and rock you and push back against you and say, no, no, this is actually the way these things work in the world. And you got to be open to that. You got to be open to look at the evidence and actually be honest with it. Because here's the reality. I was telling my church down in California this last week, telling the story about a guy I know. I used to tell him about Jesus all the time. I didn't grow up in the church, became a Christian. The only reason I came to the church is because there were good-looking girls there, and I was like, okay, this is gonna be fun, I love Jesus. And then actually came to Christ, and I started realizing that I need to tell my friends about Jesus because I'd met Jesus, and so I wanted them to know him. So I'm telling my skeptical family, my skeptical friends, and they're not believing, and they're not believing. And finally, I'm like, well, what kind of evidence can I point to that? And I was kind of looking for things in their life. And I remember this one guy, he was down somewhere and he got bitten by a whole bunch of red ants. And the red ants just started, and he was like, oh my goodness, he didn't realize he was allergic to red ants, can totally kill you. He goes into the shower, starts to shower them off. That doesn't work, it actually makes them worse. And he's like, oh my goodness, what am I gonna do? I gotta get rid of these. And so he gets on a bike and he just starts driving around, riding around his little neighborhood. And he just starts having like this anaphylactic shock or whatever, falls on the grass and just starts to die. And this lady just walks out of her house, and she's like, oh, she looks down. She's like, I think he's having an anaphylactic shock right now. I know what I'll do. Runs inside, gets one of those EpiPens, just happens to have one in the house, walks out and goes, oh, I think this man needs this, and just starts giving, well, probably not in stabbing motion, but however, I'm not a nurse. So gives him the jab or whatever you do. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Gives him the jab. Somebody just said, boo, boo, PTSD. All right, gives him the EpiPen, all right? Everyone calm down. And he wakes up and he's like, oh my gosh, I'm fine. I survived. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, are you wanting to accept Christ now? Like, look at the chances that you just happen to fall on the front grass of the one lady in your neighborhood that happened to have an EpiPen, figured out you were dying, gave it to you, like all of this is mathematically impossible. And he's like, no, boy, I was lucky, wasn't I? No! Why? See, we look at evidence and we skew it to what we already want to be the case. We've already concluded, I don't want to believe in God, so anything that happens in our life, miracle of miracles, and you still remain a doubting Thomas versus someone who goes, I'm gonna actually look into the evidence and go, maybe I will actually examine my life and give my life to Jesus. So I would just challenge you right off the top as you explore Christianity today, later on, weeks, years ahead, make sure you're constantly examining your doubts and going, okay, what do I actually believe and why do I believe it? Now, here's what Thomas asks him. Lord, we do not know where you are going because Jesus has just talked about heaven. You know, I'm gonna go prepare a place for you and so on. How can we know the way? So he asks this question, how can we actually get there? You're going to heaven. We don't know how to get there. How can we get there? So this is the question of religion, right? This is the question of, I wanna go to heaven. I wanna connect to God. What do I need to do? What do we need to do? Is it enough that I don't watch these websites and listen to this music? And if it's enough if I go to church, and these are the things that we tend to say, do these things or don't do these things, and then you can go to heaven when you die. But that's religion. What Jesus is gonna go on to do is say, it's not based, listen very carefully, it's not based on what you do for God, but based on what God has done for you, right? In the person and the work of Jesus, which is about what he's about to say, so it's not about you. So I know that's hard for us to kind of take in. Even I was talking to someone the other day, and they're like, I don't understand this Bible passage. It just seems like it's not relevant to me. I'm like, because it wasn't written to you. The Bible wasn't written to you guys. This is Bible College 101. The Bible was written for you by implication. But sometimes when you're reading Leviticus and it's going on about drapes and whatever, it's because God's not thinking primarily about you in 2022. He's got something else to deal with 3,000 years ago. And so we're constantly asked the question, what about me? What can I do? What can I do? And Jesus comes along and he says, no, it's actually not about what you can do. And so we struggle with that because we think to ourselves, if we just do this and we do this and we don't do this, we know that we go to heaven when we die. Problem is, the Bible comes along and says what Jesus said in John chapter 3. You have to actually be born again, that your first birth isn't enough to get you into heaven. And you actually have to be born of the Spirit of God to ever enter heaven, to ever get salvation, to ever get God. And we struggle with that. And we try to figure out, what can we do? And this is why I was reading the Gospels recently, and I noticed that every time Mary comes up in the text, like Jesus' mom, he distances himself from her. You ever notice that? Right? He always constantly, he's always like people are like, hey, your mother and your sisters and brothers are here to talk to you, Jesus. And he's like in this rammed room, and he's like, who are my mother and my brothers? You are all my mother. Everyone's like, no, but they're out there. They just want to talk to you. What do you mean I'm not your what? Right? And like the wedding at Cana, it's like, hey, Jesus. She comes, she's like, hey, we're out of wine. We need more wine. He's like, woman, do not just, like, who talks to their mom like this? Like, woman, away from me. It's not my time. And then he goes and does it anyway, like a good Jewish boy should. But the reality is constantly distancing himself from her. Go read it. Even actually, I realized this after I noticed this, even on the cross, and I think it's in the Gospel of John, he looks to John when he's on the cross and he says, this is your mother. And he looks at Mary and says, this is your son. It's fascinating what Jesus is doing. You know what? Here's why I think he's doing it. Because even Mary, listen to me, I don't care how long you've been to church. I don't care if you do Oswald Chambers every day in your devotions. I don't care if you listen to Hillsong. I don't care if you memorize Mark Clark sermons on YouTube. I don't care. I don't care what you do. You can be born in the church, get married in the church, serve in the church, die in the church, have your funeral in the church, and still wake up in hell. Because you don't actually know him. And what he's trying to say to Mary is, don't think that just because you're my mom, you're in. You too have to come through me. You too have to actually be humble enough to go, I'm a sinner and I need to become a disciple of Jesus to ever get in. And that's the fear. So some of you are here and you're like, yeah, but me being here makes me a Christian. That's you trying to make it about what you do versus what he has done in the cross and in the resurrection. And this is why this text comes at us and challenges us over and over and over again. Because what we do is we categorize ourselves, especially as religious people, as those pagans out there. You got those pagans out there, and then you got us. And we already know they're pagans out there because you've been involved in a culture war and you've been watching on social media and you've already figured out politically those are the people who are in and politically those are the people out. And theologically those are the people and sexually those are the people. And you've already figured out the ins and outs. But then I remember the first time I ever preached a sermon at a church. I was 20 years old, preached my sermon. Guy walks up to me, goes, I'm sure you said some really great stuff. I never heard a word of it. And I said, why? He said, because you were wearing blue jeans. And son, you got to put on your best because God deserves your best. You should have a 3-piece suit on right now. And I realized in that moment there are more ways of being lost than just one. You don't have to be a pagan to be lost. You can be the most religious person in this room and still not know God at all. You could be on this worship team and still be lost. You could be on the preaching team and still be lost and not actually know him. This is what Jesus is trying to do. Get your eyes off you and get them on me. So here's what he says now. This is one of the most fundamental central texts in the whole New Testament. He says this, this is about me, not about you. How do we get to God? How do we get contentment? How do we get joy? How do we get to heaven? How do we have joy in our life? You do it through me, not through yourselves. That's the first thing. It's not through you and building your perfect little life. And you're gonna build a perfect family, and then you're gonna feel saved. And you're gonna build your perfect home, and then you're gonna feel happy and content. And you're gonna have the perfect job, and you're gonna be happy and content. You're gonna have perfect kids, and you're gonna be happy and content. And all of that, he says, isn't actually the way. It's not about going into yourself. It's not about finding yourself. It's not about the five principles of a better. It's none of that. He goes, it's me, which means you have to die. And then you live in me. And so he's saying, I am actually the thing that this story is about. There's a guy named Mark Sayers. He wrote a book talked about the idea that for the last 50 or 60 years, we've made all of life about us. And here's what he says. We now believe collectively that the highest good is individual freedom, happiness, self-definition, and self-expression. That the primary social ethic is tolerance of everyone's self-defined quest for individual freedom and self-expression, the journey into the self. And Jesus goes, no, guys, it's not about you journeying into yourself. I'm the definition of reality, right? I'm the definition. Now, here's the problem. If you live in the, you know, in the post-Christian West, and maybe you went to university for a year or two, and you begin to think philosophically about your own life, you begin to go, no, but it can't be about God, because it's about me. I make decisions, I do things, I'm a free will creature that walks around and takes in evidence and thinks through things. I was preaching last week at our church, and it was Romans chapter 9. So Romans chapter 9, super difficult passage, where God goes, Jacob I loved, Esau I hated, I'm choosing Pharaoh, I'm hardening Pharaoh's heart, I'm doing all this stuff, and I'm like, oh my goodness, oh my God. And I get up and I talked about the idea that you guys think you have free will, but that's a concept. Think about the idea of free will. You think that you were born into the world, you just walk around neutral, you gather information, and you just came into the world like just a blank slate of information, but you didn't. Because Martin Luther talks about the idea and the bondage of the will, that our sin, our hearts are already geared towards sin. That's why Jesus says, out of the heart comes adultery and gossip and sexual immorality. It's out of the heart. You're already prone to sin naturally, so what you need is God to actually come in and save you. And if you think you have free will and you're such a smart, objective person, you're not realizing that every moment your mind is shaped by YouTube, by CNN, by Fox News, by TikTok. I talk to guys, you think, if you're a man and you're in here right now and you're wearing clothes, you think you're a free will creature who chose those? Your wife has been manipulating your brain for 20 years, bro. Right? She has been whispering in your ear when you're sleeping, throw out those pants, Tom. They're ugly. No more cargo shorts, Tom. You're not living in your own free will. You're part of an empire that spends billions of dollars to shape what you think about life, about womanhood, about manhood, about salvation, about everything. And Jesus comes in and goes, that's you trying to make it about you. But the reality is, he says, I am the way. So he's going to say three things. First, he says, I'm the way. The way to what? The way to heaven, the way to joy, the way to God, the way to contentment. I'm the way, and we begin to realize that there's so much depression, so much anxiety, so much stress in the Western world, and I think it's partly because we keep thinking of ourselves as the way, and we put a burden on ourselves that we were never meant to bear. We've eliminated God. We've eliminated the transcendent, so then all that we have is us, and we get a little hopeless because we realize we should probably not be the heroes of this story. We should probably not be our own saviors because it crushes us, and that's why you're all anxious. That's why you're all depressed. That's why we're in the Western world, we're the richest people in the world and the people on the most antidepressants in the world. Why? Because you think it's about you and you have no God to help you absorb the suffering. You have no God to help absorb the pain because you eliminated the transcendent from any kind of reality. And so it's all about you. And Jesus pushes back. He goes, guys, it's all about me. And then he says this. And he kind of doubles down on this, because this is, now, let's just realize this. This is super offensive, right? I am the way, like, what do you mean you're the way? There's a billion ways. There's every way. There's every way to get to heaven. There's every way to get to God, and that's your way, but it might not be my way, because my way is how I feel it should be. That's how we kind of function. Now, if you're offended by that, I'm not the one saying it. Jesus is. Right? So don't, the church hurt me. Why? Because the church is so exclusivistic. No, Jesus is. So if you have like a beef, take it up with him. The church is just doing its best to go, oh my gosh, that's problematic. Got to say it anyway. People might leave the church. So Jesus doubles down on this crazy statement. And he says this, one of the most central text in the whole New Testament about a concept called exclusivity. If it was not clear to you, no one comes to the Father except through me, period. Amen. Now, here's the problem with it. That means there's only one way to God. That means, by default, every other religion is wrong. I know. Chill, relax. I know, that's not easy. That's not easy, because then when you're sitting around with your friends, you gotta go, yeah, I know you think that, you know, eating mushrooms and connecting with the universe frees your brain, but you're wrong. And I know you think that holy book is actually legitimate, and I know you think that religion's legitimate, but it's actually not. Now, here's the logic of this, though, just before you freak out and leave and be like, I can't believe in the 21st century we still talk like this. So here's the logic of it, though. So if you read Timothy Keller's, his pastor in Manhattan, one of the most progressive, you know, inclusivist cultures in the Western world, of course, and he had a church there, and he used to be invited to speak on stages a lot to university students. And so himself as a Christian minister and a Muslim imam, which is like a pastor, a teacher in Islam, and a Jewish rabbi got on the stage, and they all talked about their philosophies of ideas and God and whatever. And they all agreed, all three of them on the stage, that if Christianity was right, the other two were wrong. And then the other two said, but if Islam is right, then Christianity and Judaism is wrong. And then the rabbi said, but if we're right, Christianity, I know this sounds like a really bad joke, but it's not a joke. So then the rabbi says, no, if I'm right, Christianity and Islam is wrong. And they were all comfortable with that. But I'll tell you who wasn't comfortable with that. All the students. So all the students in New York University line up at the microphones and say, how dare you say this? How dare you say if one of you is right, the others are wrong? And they're all sitting there going, but it's just true, right? That's the thing, guys. It's logic. It's by necessity. It's if Jesus is the only way, then Jesus is the only way, then by default, everything else is actually wrong. Sometimes we have to bump up against reality, no matter what we think. I'm doing a wedding later on this afternoon. And here's the concept of a wedding, guys. For better, for worse, sickness and health, richer, for poorer, blah. Okay, so in that moment, that person is choosing that person exclusively, which means they're not choosing every other person in the world. That's the point of a wedding. That's the point of a marriage. So when I married Aaron, I was saying to every other woman that I'm an Aaron guy, and that means every other woman is out. Right? It's like, even though Aaron and I, there was a night we were having dinner and another couple proposed that we spend the night together, all four of us. And I don't think it was to play checkers. We're in Napa, we're having a nice dinner. We didn't know them, and it got heated. Now, in that moment, I'm like, no, when I marry Aaron, I'm saying every other woman is not my wife. That's reality. Now, we can go, no, that's so offensive. But it's reality. That's what exclusivism is. And so Jesus comes along as no other, and we say we don't like it. But how you feel about that isn't actually an impact on whether it's true or not. Right? And so I was golfing with a guy yesterday, and he puts it in. We're playing for a little Canadian money, which is actually useless to me now. I won it. I just gave it back to him. I'm like, I don't know. It's Monopoly money at this point. I accidentally handed it to people in America. Yeah, that's great. Just short. I handed it to someone in the States, and they're like, they stared at it for 5 minutes. They're like bringing people over. They're like, what is this? Is this fraudulent? I don't know what this is. So anyway, I said, did you get a 6 there? And he's like, no, I got a 5. I'm like, no, you put it in the water. You got a 6. And he's like, oh, right, I got a 6. But here's what he didn't do. Why are you being so mean to me? He didn't start crying. He just bumped up against a fact. And facts aren't value statements. They're just facts. They are what they are. It's just logic. It's math. If Jesus is the only way, by default, Joseph Smith and Mormonism isn't. I'm not being mean. I'm just saying that's what Jesus said. And all the other religions that we think up, all the other philosophies that you try to get to heaven with, Jesus is saying, no one comes to the Father except through me. I am the only gate. And then you think about, okay, but what about the universalist philosophy that talks about everybody's gonna go to heaven? The universe loves everybody. Everyone's just gonna find their own way. And Jesus throws it out and he goes, guys, no one comes except through me. That's it, through me. And so you can be a universalist, you can think everybody's gonna get in, but you're gonna bump up against reality at some point. And so Jesus is saying, that's not actually the way things work at all. Now, here's why we think that and why we struggle with this a little bit. Because, and this is very important, if you're a universalist and you think everybody deserves to go to heaven, that's because you start out with a different assumption than the Bible about what you deserve. This is very important. Because what makes you struggle with this concept is that you've been told your whole life, because you live in the Western world, that you are unique, like a snowflake. And you're a good person, and you can do anything, kiddo. And your kid's like, I can do anything, Daddy. But we all know that's not true. I can't be an NFL linebacker, guys. But I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. No, you can't. Not that. It's not what the text is about, guys. But you can do anything, kiddo. Yeah, I deserve the world. I deserve salvation. I deserve heaven. I deserve God. That's how we function by default. Now, here's the problem with that. Go back to last week, I'm preaching Romans 9, looking at the people saying, here's the problem with Romans 9. God hardens Pharaoh's heart. He chooses Abraham, but not everybody else. He chooses Israel, but not all the other nations. He says, Jacob I love, Esau I hated. And everyone's like, I can't believe it. What? I remember Charles Spurgeon back in the 1800s, he's called the Prince of Preachers, my favorite preacher in the world. He preached Romans 9 one day, and people walked up and said, I don't like this text. He said, why? He said, I just can't wrap my head around it. Why would it say Esau I hated? I don't understand. How could God say I'm not gonna choose Esau, but I'm gonna choose Jacob? And Spurgeon said this, it's fascinating to you that that's what blows your mind, because what blows my mind, listen to me, is Jacob I loved. That's what blows my mind. Because he didn't deserve it, and I don't deserve it. And so the fact that God would, by his grace, save anyone is the point. You don't deserve it. All of us, every day, wake up, and we're in a state of sin that we need to be saved from, and we choose ourselves over Jesus every day. And when we're reading the Bible, you read the Adam and Eve story, and you're like, hey, look at these guys, Adam and Eve. God puts them in the garden. It's a crazy story. Adam and Eve, you can do anything you want. You can eat anything, you can travel. Look at those mountains, look at those oceans. Go do anything. You don't even have clothes on. It's just gonna be legit. Your only task is just make a bunch of babies. This is the greatest setup in history. No clothes, make babies, have fun, climb mountains, fly, swim. I'm reading it, it's a little paraphrase in Genesis 1, but do all this stuff, do all this stuff. But there's one thing I'm asking you not to do, just one. It's just, you see that tree over there? Yeah, just don't touch it. Which one? What? Which one? And then in that moment, what God could have done was just start over. Just wipe them out. There's only two of them. You're only like a chapter into the story. Wipe them out and start over. But what does God do instead? He says, I'm going to use you. Not because you deserve it, but because I'm good. Guys, if you think you deserve stuff, then of course this is going to bug you. But if you realize that God, by his grace, let you live today. I mean, we're only at a certain time of the day, but he allowed you to get to this point with breath in your lungs. It's called the problem of good. And here's what I mean. Some of you are like, I can't believe in God because there's so much evil and pain and destruction in the world. And I understand that. It's a difficult question. But if I flipped it on you and said, wait a minute, but what about how good the universe is? Like, what about the fact that we get sex and art and music and beauty and color and food? How do you know that 99% of the evil that could be part of your life isn't being held back by a God who loves you? You don't know that. How good is the world, guys? Like, it's crazy, right? How good is it to sit with a meal with your family and friends and laugh and enjoy? Like, this is crazy what God has done. And we flip, we go, yeah, yeah, why do I get all that? Not because you deserve it, but because God is good. Not because you're good, but because God is good. This is the exclusivity that the Bible talks about. And this is why your church planting vision is important. Because if other religions could actually save people, then don't put a dollar into church planting, right? What's the point? It doesn't matter. Everyone goes to heaven. Who cares? Let's just chill out, have our church services, deet, 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 right? We'll have fun, and we'll move on with our life. But what we want to do is go, no, we need to go plant some churches all across Canada because most of Canada doesn't know this, right? They don't know Jesus. So Jesus says, I'm the way. And then he says, similarly, I'm the truth. Now some of you are like, oh, there's no such thing as truth. There's only your truth and my truth. There's no such thing as truth. And if anybody ever tells you that, just say, do you believe that statement to be true? Moving on, right? Right, because you're just cutting off philosophically the branch you're sitting on. There's no such thing as truth, there's just your truth. Really, but that's your truth, but what about my truth? Yeah, your truth. No, do you think there's objective truth? Never, accept that statement? Right, accept the statement. Wait, what? What'd you say? I don't understand, what? Jesus goes, listen, I am the truth. There is truth, and it's not concepts, it's not religion, it's not a philosophy, it's me. I am truth incarnate. Which means all the religions, all through time, all the scraping on walls, all the drawing of the stars, all the child sacrifice, all the food sacrifice, all the everything we've done as humanity for a million years trying to figure out who we are or however long the earth has been around and human beings in your particular viewpoint. All that stuff ends when Jesus shows up and goes, hey guys, I'm actually the God you've been praying to, sacrifice. I'm coming down and showing you this is who God is. This is what I think. This is how I save. This is what I'm doing in the world. And the question becomes, do you want to allow yourself to be, so this is the key. Remember the context of John 14. It's all a conversation about comfort. Remember he said, do not be troubled in this world. John chapter 14, verse 1, that's the context. And we're all in anxiety and stress. And what does Jesus do? He doesn't come along and go, I'm going to give you comforting ideas. That's what we do. He goes, I'm going to give you truth. Isn't that beautiful? It's like when people start to, when their marriages start to get rocky. I was reading one marriage book of my friend's wife, Tony Newhoff, wrote a book on marriage called Before You Split. And she talks about the idea of beware of the cheerleaders. Beware of when your marriage starts to get rocky, that all of a sudden you find yourself just hanging out with a whole bunch of people who are an echo chamber for you, who already agree with you and hate your spouse. Oh, that jerk, I know that jerk. I can't believe that jerk. Yeah, I can't believe it. Let's have the girls over. Okay, and all of a sudden there's eight people in the house. I can't believe, yeah, my husband does that too. Maybe I should. Beware of the cheerleaders, guys. Here's what Martin Lloyd-Jones says. I love it. He goes, Jesus Christ never administers general comfort. His comfort is always based upon truth, upon doctrine, he says. That is the essential difference between the method of the Christian gospel and that of all the cults and psychology. They are simply concerned to comfort. Our Lord has a deeper and greater object to acquaint us with truth. Comfort is incidental to that. No comfort should be trusted that is not based on truth. Isn't that beautiful? We just listen to people who want to comfort us versus giving us the truth, and that's the problem. We love that as a culture. We would sit around and just be comfortable right to our deathbed and never challenge anyone with truth. And Jesus says, no, no, I'm not only the way, I am the truth. And then he says, I'm the life. And this is beautiful. This is the Greek word zoe. You have bios, which is just like physical life, but then zoe. So it means not only do you get to go to heaven, but you have truly human life, guys. I'm talking joy. Happiness, comfort, that is not based on your circumstances, but based on something transcendent. That when your circumstances change, when your marriage falls apart, see, this is the great thing about Christianity. It doesn't say your life is gonna be perfect if you give your life to Jesus. It's not the prosperity gospel that says, hey guys, you're never gonna get cancer and you're never gonna go into debt. In fact, you probably will, right? You will probably, many of you will get cancer. We have to die somehow, right? Like you look at the people in the New Testament who were raised from the dead. It's like, hey, Lazarus, get up. And he's like, oh, awesome. And he goes and lives, but he only lives another 30, 40 years. And then he's walking along. He's like, oh, man, I remember that. Yeah, he dies. He's not walking around now. We all have to die somehow. The promise of Christianity is not that you're gonna not die. It's that you're safe and dying, as we've talked about often. It's that Jesus Christ gives you a kind of contentment and transcendent life that when life falls apart, and if it hasn't for you yet, just give it time. When you're up against it, man, when life kicks back against you, which it does constantly, your work kicks back against you, your kids kick back against you, your job kicks back against you, money kicks back against you, creation kicks back against you, over and over, we live in this perpetual state of kickback, and this is why this text is so great, because Jesus is going, do not be troubled, but I'm not just going to give you comfort, I'm not going to give you words that you're like, oh, that made me feel better, I'm going to give you what? Truth. And that truth is going to lead to actual life that transcends all things. And this is the kind of power that we're talking about, the God who has power to do miracles that you could never do. It was fascinating. Last week when I was preaching that text, Romans chapter 9, the reason I keep bringing it up is because it's one of the most fascinating, difficult texts in the Bible to preach. Romans chapter 9, they're like, hey, so down at Bayside, we preach a chapter a week. Can you imagine? This is the place I work, a chapter a week, and I preach 50% of the time. And I'm like, you have seen me preach, right? Like I just did 20 minutes on Thomas, the word, not the, you know, Thomas. And you want a chapter a week. They're like, yeah. And by the way, you got Romans 9. Okay, Romans 9. Let me look. Oh, God's choosing. He's hardening heart. He's doing, killing these guys. He's choosing that guy. He's hating that guy. And I'm going to do this. Oh, and do it in 35 minutes. Perfect. Great. So I'm like, okay. So I prepped this text and I'm sitting in the backstage. We do Saturday night, 3 Sunday morning. And then Sunday night. So I preach 5 times every weekend. So I'm sitting in the backstage waiting to go out, preach Romans 9, complexities in my brain. And the lead, the guy who's hosting the service walks out. And he just said this simple thing. He said, guys, here's the reality. Some of you are here and you're new to church and you come in here. And you're going to hear a sermon in a few minutes. And Mark's going to come out here. And here's what's going to happen. He's going to take some ancient text that you guys are going to disagree with. And he's going to start saying some things. He's probably going to tell some jokes, make you laugh a little bit. Then he's going to maybe sing a song or two because that's what he likes to show off his voice. And then he's going to pull out the pamphlet and he's not going to pay attention to the fill in the blanks that the people on our mid-staff worked really hard to figure out for him to do. He's just going to ignore that. And then 15, 20 minutes in, as he unpacks this text, the room is all of a sudden going to feel really small. And it's going to feel like it's just you and him talking. And it's going to feel like, how could he know those things about me, that I think this way or I feel this way or act this way? And all of a sudden, you're going to realize that this is a God moment in your life where he is speaking to you. And it's not Mark speaking anymore. It's the Spirit speaking to you. And the question is going to be, what are you going to do with that? Are you going to respond to it or not respond to it? And I remember sitting, and I'm sitting back, and he doesn't even know what I'm going to say. This is Saturday night. And I walk out, and I did my thing, and I'm like, who's going to ever respond to a text about God choosing people and not other people and election and predestination, all this heady concept stuff. And that, and we have this thing called the I Raise My Hand table. And so I'm like, hey, if anyone, you know, after that sermon, that's just philosophy for 35 minutes about how God didn't choose everybody. And then I'm like, oh, go to the I Raise My Hand table. And he texts me that night. He's like, more people than ever went to that table since you've been here. What is that? That's the power of God bringing life, y'all. I say y'all now. I listen to country music too, which is brutal because I've only been there for 2 months, so I don't know where this is going. Guys, this is the power of God to actually bring life to us. Okay, let me end by talking about you. Jesus then says in the text something that's fascinating. He ends it this way. Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever believes in me will also do the works that I do. Can I just say something? As we look for the comfort of our life, as we look for actual purpose and meaning and value, Jesus comes and says, I need you guys to do the work that God has given you to do. You all have giftings, passions, experiences, things that you God has wired you to do. And Jesus just said, do them. And that's not antithetical to you finding comfort and meaning. That's actually part of it. I have a friend right now who's going through a divorce. Of all the things that we've talked about that's gonna give him comfort and meaning and value, one of the things we talked about was I said, make sure you find someone and you pour into them because discipling other people is part of your discipleship and it will heal you guys. Some of us just live autonomous lives. We're so invested trying to figure out, feed the kids, get them to school, get to practice, do this thing, hit the repeat. You're not pouring into anyone. You're not using your gifts, your passions, your values, your experience to go, I gotta bless other people. I gotta do the works in the world that can bless the world versus just honing in on myself. Some of you, you got spiritual gifts of teaching. Use it. Some of you got spiritual gifts of serving. Use it. Some of you have gifts of hospitality. Use your house so people meet Jesus. Some of you have the gift of giving. You know how to make money and you gotta give it. Be generous. That's how the church planting is gonna happen. That's how the church is gonna go forward. You take your gifts and you use them. I was at I flew from Colorado Springs to here. I was at this charity event, at this golf event for 2 or 3 days before I flew up here. And we're sitting in this room, a whole bunch of pastors. The plan was to golf twice in the day. So we golf in the morning, all the pastors sitting around for lunch. One of the pastors is like, oh, I gotta work this afternoon. I'm like, work? Work holds up. What are you talking about, Brian? We're gonna go golfing. You're gonna go golfing. You deserve golfing. And all of a sudden, I just start going at him. And the whole room's like, yeah. And then this guy's like, I'm just gonna stay back. I'm like, stay back. Come on, bro. You only live once. What are you talking about? And all of a sudden, everyone was coming golfing. And the guy goes, man, can you tell this guy's an evangelist? He just changed my whole opinion on everything in 5 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, listen. That's what I do. God has wired me to do that, so that's why I'm here. Guys, there are a million things I do awful, and anyone close to me knows it. I have a very specific set of skills. I sound like Liam Neeson. I have a very specific set of skills, guys. I can do a few things, but man, I hack stuff. And this is the thing. Some of you are like, I'm not gifted enough. I make too many mistakes. I talked to a guy the other day. He's like, I feel like I have the spiritual gift of healing, but I'm such a goof that I never tell anybody I have it because I know they're gonna judge me and say, that's just all in your head. And so he doesn't use it. The amount of goofiness, guys, that I portray in my life and God still somehow uses me to do something, even a little bit. I got a new job, guys. I go down there. And I don't even know why I go to, like I said, I don't use the fill in the blanks. We work on them for hours every week. I never even look at them. They're like, dude, you've been here 2 months. You can't figure this out yet? I'm like, oh yeah, guys, fill in the blanks. I led my first meeting. I wish there could have been a fly on the wall. I walked into the meeting. I'm like, okay, guys, here's the vision. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go multi-site. We're going to do video. We're going to do the IMAX. Hey, what do you do? Hey, you do this. You do this. Marching orders. 1 hour of just legit vision, strategy. Boom, boom, boom. At the end of it, I'm like, and 10 people knew him. They're like, okay, I'm taking notes. All right, good to go. I look at my admin. I'm like, anything else to say? She's like, well, why don't we ask them what their names are? I'm like, right. Your people. Yeah, what's your name? Right, because that's what we do, man. We are utilitarian. We use people according to what they can do. Right, that's how we think as human beings. Like, so last weekend, I'm sitting in my backyard. I'm working, and my dog's outside, little Boston Terrier outside, running around. All of a sudden, she starts to bark like crazy, and I'm like, uh-oh. And there's this like box of all the shoes and stuff. And so she's like barking and she's under the thing, like just, and I'm like, what is this dog doing? So I walk over and I hear something under the box just go boom. And I'm like, I'm out. So I go inside my house. My three daughters are there. What's going on? Why is Ari barking? I don't know. You go check it out. So my middle daughter, Hayden, goes out. She's like, I'll go get it. Goes under the thing, thinks there's like, goes, ah! Skunk, right? Runs inside, she goes white. I mean, she's already pale, so she goes white. There's a skunk. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a skunk. We shut the doors, and Ari and the skunk are outside by themselves. I'm like, abandon the dog, man. The dog's done. And bark. And we're watching this little skunk under the box. I'm like, what the heck are we gonna do? And so literally, if you could have checked this scene, I got my two youngest daughters in the fetal position, just screaming, Ari's gonna die! I'm telling everybody, you grabbed this, you grabbed that. And my wife's filming the whole thing for Instagram. Just like, gonna film all you crazy people and get some followers. And so no joke, I go, Sienna's my oldest. Get over here, because she's got the muscles, she's got the arms, she's got the strength. Get over here. We're going to solve this. So we go into our garage, we open it, we got this big like net, and we're getting in, and we're banging this thing, and it's not coming out. We're trying to lift it, we're spraying it with a hose. Finally, Santa's like, why don't we have a brother? And I'm just like, oh man. See, this is what we do, man. She's the strongest. She has muscles. She can help me. That's utilitarian thinking. I'm going to use you because you're useful to me. And that's why we think that if we're a goof and we make mistakes, God can never use us. And that's not how God works. He says, you're all goofy. You're a mess. You got egos. You got stuff you don't want people to find out. You're self-conscious, you don't think God could use you, and so you sit in silence, and you're not doing this. And Jesus says, knock it off, guys. Get over yourself. Time is short, you got one life, do the works, reach some people, and die with your boots on. That's the message of Christianity from this text. But you gotta actually step into it. You gotta step into it. We only have a certain amount of time to impact the world that we're trying to reach. So, Father, I do pray that there is inspiration for people sitting here who understand that Jesus is in fact the only way to you, to heaven, to salvation, to truth, to joy, to contentment, and that they would use their gifting, their passion to reach as many people with that reality that they can with the time they've been given. That this church, led by these great elders and leaders and pastors and staff, would actually keep that mission and vision in front of them and accomplish this great goal with the people that make up Village. That we would use the things you've given to us, our gift of giving, our gift of serving, our gift of hospitality, teaching, whatever you have done, however you have wired us, here's Jesus going, guys, you're gonna do greater works than me, meaning not do greater miracles, but have a bit more expansive reality in the world because I'm a localized person. But when the church gets fired up and the church steps into their purpose, you guys are gonna accomplish more than even I did with my 33 years on this planet. What a vision to get our hearts just pumping. And I pray that that's the case in this room, at all the campuses, online, that every individual would understand God is using them, wiring them to do the work and not just sit on their hands. Inspire us, lead us, empower us. In Jesus' good name we pray. Amen.
Thanks for joining us today. If you have been helped in any way by the message you just heard, consider partnering with us and seeing people transformed into fully devoted followers of Jesus. Go to thisisvillagechurch.com/give or simply text the words Village Church to 77977. For access anytime to all our sermons and other content, go to villageondemand.com.